Okay, everyone, welcome back. So this is the graveyard shift, or the last session, but we always save the best till last. So this is a topic of special interest to myself, capital and liquidity, the changing rule of the game. Now, we are actually privileged today to have two quite esteemed guests in this area. Firstly, Gordon Ellison, who is actually a colleague of mine at NAB. Gordon is the head of Treasury Transformation and Development, and his role essentially works around a lot of the reg change and environmental change, and how do we make sure that the Treasury capital liquidity spaces are optimised considering that. And our other speaker today is Paolo Tonucci from CBA, who is the Group Treasurer at CBA. I'll introduce the speakers. Gordon will go first, and then we'll have Paolo, and then we'll have questions as per the other sessions afterwards. So the first speaker is Gordon Ellison. I mentioned he's head of Treasury Development and Transformation at National Australia Bank Group Treasury. This role manages regulatory change, including Treasury capital funding and liquidity. Gordon's worked at various roles in NAB over the last 9 years, which have included personal bank, business bank, product and markets, finance and operations. This has involved developing, managing and optimising the capital funding and liquidity position of the Australian Bank, developing risk frameworks and plans for interest rate risk, foreign exchange risk, securitisation, liquidity and funding risk, and engaging with regulators and rating agencies. He was also involved in managing the group's funding and liquidity position through the GFC, so that's a lot of fun. So, Gordon, over to you, my friend.
Thanks, Phil. Appreciate those kind words. Look, it was a bit of fun managing during the GFC, but not a patch on Paolo during more intimate experience, so I certainly look forward to Paolo's presentation as well. We've covered quite a lot of ground today around mortgages, regulatory change and innovation. So we'll bring this session back, I suppose, more to a Treasury focus. And it's an area that it certainly will be of interest to actuaries with the kind of skill set that you bring. It's something that is highly in demand. I've had some success in hiring actuaries into Treasury. So hopefully you find this interesting and give you some interesting ideas as well. So I'll specifically be talking about liquidity, which is one of the challenges we're facing into as a Treasury and also as banks. And specifically I'll focus on the net stable funding ratio. So there's two new liquidity ratios that we're having to face into. I won't focus on the LCR. That the work on that is largely done for the major banks, and we're all in a reasonably good space with 100% required compliance required at the start of this year, which was earlier than other jurisdictions. The challenge we're facing into now, though, is the net stable funding ratio. So the best way to think about this is a structural funding ratio. So it looks at promoting more stable funding of a bank's asset and thereby managing liquidity risk. Now, liquidity is something that doesn't always get the focus that I think it deserves at banks. Taking a step back, when you look at bank profitability and bank growth, there's really two kind of ultimate constraints on a bank balance sheet size. So, absenting kind of logistical marketing constraints, provided you've got worthy investments to make, the two main constraints are liquidity and profitability. So banks will continue to grow their balance sheet provided they have profitable opportunities and provided they can generate enough capital internally, they can continue to do that, which means then that the other main constraint is liquidity. And I think increasingly, and particularly with the design of the net stable funding ratio, this might become a real constraint for banks and something that we'll have to manage carefully. So the first question then is why are the regulators concerned about liquidity in this way? There's a number of ways to look at that. I think one helpful way, and picking up some comments from Andrew Haldane from the Bank of England, is to look at our financial system as a network. And I think this does provide some useful insights. It introduces some of the ideas around complexity theory and network theory. And I think it certainly does help explain some of the behaviours we see when financial systems break down, that in a sense they're behaving like other systems under stress. And there's numerous examples of that. You can look at electricity grids, ecosystems, spreads of epidemics, things like that. They all behave in systems. And the reason why the financial system behaves as a system is that there's network uncertainty. So it's not just enough to understand a counterparty. It might be your counterparty's counterparty that brings your counterparty on data. Hence, there's network effects and there's unknowns in that, which means that in times of stress, you can tend to see banks hoarding liquidity for sales. That involves feedback loops then into asset valuation and further implications in our credit and capital. So I think it's a worthwhile insight, and we're indebted to the work of Clive Granger, who will be known to some of you on causality and some of the networking systems theory. So how does the new measure look, net stable funding ratio? What I've got here is a chart that was produced by the IMF, which shows a global view of how countries perform on this liquidity measure. And it actually looks surprisingly green. There are a couple of points to highlight with this, though, and important to note. First of all, it's not entirely green, and there are some countries with shortfalls. Difficult to see on the chart, but notable exceptions are Australia, France, Sweden and Italy. The second point to note is this is an unweighted view, and we tend to find that large banks tend to have lower net stable funding ratios than small banks, so this will tend to overstate ratios. And also when the IMF did this work, they didn't have the granularity to dig into the liabilities and deposits, so they assumed they were all retail. So again, this will overstate ratios. Overnight, I note that the Basel Committee and the ECB came out with some of their quiz reports and noted that overall banks do reasonably well, but still there's a significant portion. So about 25% of Group 1 banks don't meet NSFR currently, and the aggregate shortfall is 576 billion euros. So it's a fairly large number that banks will need to face into in coming years. Some regions do quite well on NSFR. So I was in Asia recently and they were particularly relaxed about NSFR, and for good reason. There's high correlation between NSFR and loan-to-deposit ratios, and Asia generally has some very strong loan-to-deposit ratios. Australia tends to be more constrained on that, and there's a couple of reasons for that. One is the role of our super system and the form that liabilities come back to banks as corporate and FI deposits rather than retail deposits, and they're punitively marked for the liquidity requirements of NSFR. And I think also there's implications of how our current account deficit is financed and banks' role in that and the preference of offshore counterparties for wholesale instruments rather than deposits. So I've done a regional distribution of NSFR. Again, this is from the IMF report, so it will flatter ratios. But you can see it's likely to be a challenge for most Australian banks. Other regions do better. You'll see a lot of the banks in Asia look particularly strong. So it's something we're facing into. What I've done here then is just produce a simple model of a bank with a fairly conventional mix of securities, lending and liabilities. And what I wanted to see was how sensitive is a bank balance sheet to the two liquidity measures, so liquidity coverage ratio and net stable funding ratio. And what does it look like to shift the dial on those two metrics? The first thing you'll note is that LCR is far more sensitive than NSFR, so it's much easier. The scale on this is the same, so for a similar change in balance sheet composition, it's far easier to change LCR than it is to change NSFR, with one exception that I'll get to. What you're seeing here then is the outcome of four or five different strategies. So looking at changing the balance sheet mix. So there's a number of things a bank can do to improve its liquidity position. One of the things it can do is to replace lending with liquids. So leave the balance sheet size the same, but increase the amount of liquids on the balance sheet at the expense of lending. And this is what you see in the red line. So you see a very rapid improvement in LCR with that strategy. It takes considerable work to shift the dial on NSFR. High quality liquid assets, this won't be that much help to us in Australia because APRA don't allow us to use level 2 liquid assets, but it will be relevant for other jurisdictions around the world. I had a look at changing off balance sheet, and this is all to scale as well. Off balance sheet, unfortunately, doesn't really move the dial for NSFR because it's got a fairly low runoff factor. It's only got a 5% weighting. So even if you've got significant off balance sheet exposures, reducing those doesn't help too much. So look, the key message out of this slide is that, and combining on the previous slides, is that Australian banks will have a challenge on NSFR. It's a structural challenge, and it's something that's difficult to shift. So it's something we'll have to give some thought to. And I noted comments from one of our advisors earlier this morning on the expectation that that banks start to face into this. So we'll hear more about this in future. The other thing we need to be mindful of is all of the other regulatory change that's occurring. And the insight here is that all of this regulatory change will impact liquidity metrics. So liquidity metrics are the outcome of a whole range of different inputs. Capital obviously impacts liquidity, as does approach to markets and trading, and balance sheet. And there's a significant amount of change happening at the moment. So as you'd be aware, what we're calling Basel IV is looking at capital floors and revisions to standardised credit risk and also operational risk. They're looking at how stress testing is conducted. Leverage ratio, countercyclical capital buffer will come in next year. Total loss absorbing capacity, or MERL, as they call it in Europe. These are significant changes to the capital structure of a bank balance sheet, which will have an impact on liquidity. Likewise, there's changes in the market space. So we've just recently completed our quiz on interest rate risk in the banking book. So the Basel proposal on how that gets measured and managed. And there's also changes in the markets business on fundamental review of the trading book, which is now linked to CBA, and standardised approach to counterparty credit risk. So there's a lot happening. That will obviously impact on how much capital is required to be held, but it also changes the dynamics of the liquidity and the way markets operate. And that was a useful addition to that debate from the IIF recently on market liquidity and looking at regulatory change in that space. And that also then flows on to balance sheet, and there's various measures there that will then impact on liquidity. So it's a complex area, but an interesting area. One of the challenges then is solving for multiple dimensions at the same time. So understanding the broad range of regulatory change and optimising metrics. Which brings me to this slide. The way we tend to think about it, there are, I suppose, five key dimensions that banks are now required to optimise across. So we've always had capital, main one being the Common Equity Tier 1, the new metrics being leverage, and then the liquidity metrics, and also total loss absorbing capacity, so bailing liabilities. The challenge here then is to optimise across multiple dimensions. Each of these dimensions are likely to have to be optimised across each legal entity of a bank. So that then makes banks with complex legal entity structures possibly less efficient in how they do that, given that it's possible that you get trapped capital liquidity in those entities, and possibly more, it might be more difficult to move that capital and liquidity out of those entities, which means then a degree of inefficiency when you look at a group structure. And look, that perhaps shouldn't come as a surprise to us. I think one of the intentions of regulatory reform was to make it more difficult for large, complex banks to make that business model less attractive as part of the push for too big to fail. So we shouldn't be entirely surprised that's an outcome. So how should we think about this regulatory change and managing liquidity then? Obviously, there's implications for product design, and I think we will see some more innovation in this space. I don't think we've really given serious consideration to how we might design and price products to extract the liquidity that the banking and financial system needs, and yet provides customers with a reasonable return for that liquidity. So I think we'll see more work on product design. There's a number of levers we do have across balance sheet, pricing and funding, and they'll be important to manage as well. And in terms of implementation, it will be another significant challenge for banks. I think in some ways perhaps as large as the Basel II challenge, which was significant for banks in terms of resources and data and infrastructure and spend. The good news here, particularly with net stable funding ratio, is the ability to leverage a lot of the infrastructure that went into liquidity coverage ratio should also be applicable for net stable funding ratio. So my final message then is that structural balance sheet will take time. Australia does have a structural challenge with funding. It's something that's not easy to shift. We've got a few years until 2018 to face into that, but it's something that I think as an industry we'll need to face into in order to solve for and ensure that the banks remain profitable and able to support our customers. Hand back to Phil now to introduce Parley.